Hi, I'm Lindsay Levinson. I am your host. Welcome to Straight Up Sex Talk. We are here to educate. We're here to share. We're here to collaborate. We're here to build a community of support. And we are here, as I say boldly, to change the world. Lack of tolerance needs to be turned into enlightenment. Anger and judgment, that needs to be transformed into compassion and empathy. Is it possible? I think it really is. Because what stands between that happening and us is action. People like us want it, but we need to take action. We need to speak. We need to build a community, and we need to make it clear for people and educate people as to what is needed so that people aren't ignorant and can understand. And then the world starts to change. So I want you to really believe in this. I want you to really understand we can make a difference, and each one of you listening is making a difference right now. This is a movement. It is a time for change. And I have said it before, and I will say it again. We are losing lives every day. Every day that we delay taking an action. So I'm really proud and honored. And frankly, I'm totally excited to have our guest back for part two of this two-week series on the reality of transgender. It's such a huge issue, and boy, do we need information. And I'm going to introduce him in a minute. Let me tell you, you can find me at qualityforlifecoaching.com. Quality for Life Coaching. Four words, no numbers, no spaces. All together, qualityforlifecoaching.com. Check out that site. A lot for you to see, a lot for you to understand, lots of ways to get to me. And I want to talk to you about anything. And I will absolutely do a free consult with you if anything's on your mind regarding sexuality or anything else for that matter. Check out the site Passionate Potential. I'm not saying passion, I'm saying passionate. Passionate Potential, all one word, .com. I'll leave it to you to go see what that site's about because it's a blast. You're going to love it. My guest is about to be introduced, but first let me just tell you a bit about this amazing man and this amazing doctor. He is highly acclaimed in his field. He has been awarded, and he's been on CBS, NBC, WebMD. There are so many places this man is called upon to share what he knows and to share his talents and the experiences that can enlighten the world. He is a source of wisdom that the world is seeking. He founded the Philadelphia Center for Transgender Surgery. It's one of the most unique and comprehensive facilities that we will talk more about, but can you imagine? Can you imagine founding that? Like, how fabulous. So we are going to meet this man, but I'm going to get into a little bit more of an in-depth bio. I did do it last week, but maybe you haven't heard that archive yet. Maybe you weren't around to listen. So I'm going to tell you again. Sherman Lees, Dr. Sherman Lees, is a professor. He's professor and chairman of plastic and reconstructive surgery at the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine. He is board certified in general surgery and plastic and reconstructive surgery. And in addition to a busy general plastic surgery practice, he specializes in all types of transgender surgery. Can you imagine what that sounds like to the people out there, people that are listening, that he specializes in all types of transgender surgery? He was awarded a prestigious fellowship for the study of plastic and reconstructive surgery in Europe, became the first DO to be licensed in Sweden and France. He served on the surgical staffs of university hospitals in both countries, and he lectured to the plastic surgery societies of both those countries in their native languages. Would you call the guy brilliant? I think I would. He published papers in both the Swedish and French national plastic surgery journals. You know, in 2005, Dr. Lees founded a unique institution, and that's what I mentioned earlier, the Philadelphia Center for Transgender Surgery. It is one of the most comprehensive facilities of its type in the United States, offering a wide variety of services to the transgender community. In addition to surgical services, the center provides referrals to a team of professionals who have expertise in servicing the surgical, but also the non-surgical needs of transgender individuals. It's just one of the few comprehensive centers of its type in the United States. Because of these achievements, and for introducing and establishing the specialty of plastic surgery and osteopathic profession, in 2007, Dr. Sherman Leese was the recipient of the Oral F. Martin Award. That's the highest award given by the American College of Osteopathic Surgeons for distinguished service to his profession. And in 2014, he received the Presidential Citation from the American Osteopathic Association. So, I mean, I'm only touching the top here. I'm only touching the top of the iceberg. If I, you know, you want to see the man's resume, you'll just, you know, your mouth will drop open if it hasn't already. Dr. Leese, I am so thrilled that you came back for week two. You're like the busiest man on the planet, and I'm just thrilled to have you here, and I want to thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Lindsay. I'm happy to be back with you again.
It's great. Boy, our show flew by last week, and I had so many things to talk about and couldn't believe when the time was up. So the first thing I really want to talk about, although I have lots of detailed questions just about exactly what you do and the things people out there want to know about what happens when you go get a transgender surgical procedure, but I want to just start really by asking about the center. Like, what compelled you to launch that project? And can you talk about what you mean by resources that are surgical, non-surgical? I've looked it up and I'm blown away by it, but I want you to talk to the folks that are listening about it.
Well, I had already been practicing plastic surgery for about 30 years when I had the opportunity to get very involved with the transgender community through one of my residents who encouraged me to do the surgery because there just simply aren't enough transgender surgeons out there, especially in the United States. There are more in Europe than there are, and in Thailand than there are here in the United States. And when I decided to get involved with this practice, I thought it would be really good to have a one-stop site where people could come at any level of their transition and go through the whole process. So I started to make connections with other specialists in the Philadelphia area, endocrinologists to handle hormonal treatment, psychologists, psychiatrists, and counselors to help with the evaluation and support of transgender people beginning the transition, lawyers to help with legal problems that some transgender people get involved with, and name change processes, hair, fashion, cosmetic, grooming helpers, to help in all the aspects that a transgender person could possibly need. So people could come to us either from the very beginning, when they're just beginning to think seriously about transitioning, or somewhere along the middle. Maybe they've had some surgery already, or they've been on hormones, and they are living full-time in their desired gender, or they're about to start, and they have questions about surgery or how to proceed to a full transition. Or sometimes people come to me having had a lot of surgery, all types of surgery, top, you know, facial surgery, chest surgery, and bottom surgery, and may have a problem. And I have a lot of years in surgery and in reconstructive surgery, and we usually can help them sort out their problem and help them on their way to have a normal life again. So that was my idea, that we could have a comprehensive center where people could get all types of care, get any type of care that they need to have a successful transition. And it's turned out well that way. And people come to us from all over the United States and Canada, and in fact, around the world. And we try our best to help them.
That is just, I know I've used the word evolved with you before. And I mean, from the very first time I talked to you on the phone, I think I told you on the phone the very first time I talked to you, you are an evolved thinker. You're an evolved man because you're so way ahead of your time. I mean, to be working on the transgender community anyway, but to think about this, for you to understand and to, you know, as if you're not busy enough and as if this isn't a fantastic contribution that you've dedicated yourself to some piece of medical care that can't can't be trumped. It cannot be trumped. Making people want their life, live their life, and love their life. That cannot be beat, what you contribute there. But then you set up this center, understanding, I'll call it integrative health, holistic. It's a whole picture. You don't just change your sex and not need to process what that might mean to your hormones or exactly how you address the way that you feel or going into this bathroom or while you're in the middle of your surgeries. What do you like to be able to talk to people and get grounded in these decisions and get support and have the different resources that you're speaking of. It's just phenomenal that you have such expansive thinking in the way that you're doing this, and it is rare. It's so rare, and it's got to be so comforting to the people who come to you.
I have to tell you, it's a little bit selfish too, from the point of view that it makes me feel good about who I am and that what I'm able to do to help people. I get up every day thinking that I'm doing something valuable, and that's why I really have no plans for retirement, because I'm very happy at what I do. I went into plastic surgery to begin with because all types of plastic surgery helps people feel better about themselves. But in transgender surgery, that concept is at its maximum. And I really do believe that there is no field in or out of medicine that has the ability to make such a profound improvement of someone's life as transgender surgery, physically, mentally, emotionally. What other field in the world can have that power, such a profound power to help people in such a big way? So that makes me feel better about what I do and knowing that I can help people that way. So to me, it's a wonderful thing.
It is a wonderful thing. And I love that you make that point. And that's why I talk about having people want their life, live their life, love their life, because you're right. I mean, of course, someone who has a tumor, that's all they're focused on and would thank their doctor forever if he got it out of them and they could live. I mean, of course, there's this kind, any kind of illness, but that's, it's so much more than that. It's like a rebirth. It's like you're all in one. You're the doctor that's giving birth to the baby, or the doctor that's saving the baby's life. You're the doctor that's designing the life when the baby's old enough to actually have the cognitive thought of what life should look like. You're stopping someone from maybe committing suicide. It's so vast what this is, because people would like to call transgender people crazy, and you're someone who gets they're not crazy, they're not, and don't you find that, don't you find there's a lot of that going on where people talk about crazy as a word,
unfortunately some people think that, but when they get a little more educated, and that's why your show and shows like it are so important, so that we can educate people. But me and other people that you'll have in the future can educate people. These are not crazy people any more than you and I or everybody else is crazy. This is a type of congenital anomaly. That's how I think of it. And we can help make people's lives more meaningful. And in return, it helps my life be more meaningful too. So that's why it's a win-win situation for me and for my patients. But it certainly is, very important factor to educate public, both non-transgender public and the transgender public, to know that these people come from all walks of life, from laborers to professors and doctors and lawyers and everybody else are my patients. And they're just a whole full realm and scope of human beings from every walk of life. And they're born with a type of congenital anomaly, where, as we said last week, their brain is one gender and their body is another gender. We can't change parts of the brain too easily yet, but we can alter and refine and reconstruct parts of the body to go along with the brain. And so we can make a person whole again. We can make them their true selves. We can make them who they really feel they are. And it just improves the overall quality of their life. And that's a great thing to be able to do. And I'm glad I came along at this time in history where we have the technical skills and knowledge to be able to do these things. And it's just getting better and better, really. It's constantly getting more and more refined.
Yeah, could you just mention, you don't have to take a long time, but for anyone who, again, has maybe missed that last show or hasn't listened yet, about that Amsterdam study, because that's so powerful.
Well, as opposed to people being crazy, we now know that it's nothing to do with being psychotic or neurotic, although any of us can be psychotic or neurotic. A study that was done several years ago at the University of Amsterdam in Europe showed that transgender male to female patients really have a female brain. There's a part of our brain called the bed nucleus, which is located in the center part of our brain in the hypothalamus in an area called the stria terminalis, which is responsible for gender identity and sexual identity and choices. And it's a typical size and shape in the average male and a typical size and shape in the average in most females. And the study showed that transgender male to female people have a female bed nucleus. And so people are born with this type of anomaly. It's a disorder between the brain and the body. And like many other disorders, cleft lip and palate and extra digits or minus digits or anomalies of the heart or other parts of the body. And we try to correct this congenital anomaly by mental health evaluation and support and guidance, by hormonal treatment, and by surgery. This triad combination of therapy has been shown to be the most successful way to help these people that are born with this syndrome, this situation that is not an ideal way to be born. It's not an ideal way to be born is to have a hole in your heart or a cleft lip and palate or any other anomaly. And this isn't either. You don't see it. It's not as obvious in the beginning. But people know from the time that they're children, very young children, one of the questions that I ask my patients when they first came in to see me for a consultation is, how long have you felt different in your life? Understanding that as a child, you don't understand what it means, but how long have you felt different? And almost 100% of patients say, as long as I can remember, 3, 4, 5 years old. By 5 years old, for sure, most people know that they're different. They don't know what it is. But as time goes on, and especially as they enter their teens and they're reading more and they're learning more, they get to realize sometimes they think they're gay, but they're not. They realize eventually that they really have the brain and the emotions of the gender opposite their biologic gender. And when families today who are becoming more educated about this are sensitive enough about their children's health and welfare and take them to be evaluated by a pediatric or adolescent psychologist or psychiatrist or a pediatric clinic such as the one at Boston with Dr. Norman Spack or in Philadelphia at Children's Hospital in Philadelphia, and at the one in Los Angeles, and there's one in Cincinnati, and there's one in Washington, now Washington Children's, that are now opening up gender identity clinics at these pediatric hospitals and evaluating these kids. And if they see that they are transgender kids, they have this program of leaving them alone. Don't do anything for a while. Let them be the way they're going to be. Don't abuse them and treat them nicely. Give them respect. Just treat them the way they want to be treated. Help them in any way you can. When they're about 10 years old now, the current thing is, and the treatment today is, they put them on puberty suppressant hormones, hormone suppressants, and it blocks their puberty from developing, blocks their male or female hormones, and then leave them alone again, and then in another couple of years, give them appropriate hormones. If they're male to female, give them estrogens. If they're female to male, give them testosterone. And then they develop very well the secondary sexual characteristics of their mental and emotional gender, their true gender identity. And then later into their mid-teens, you can start, if they want to, they can start thinking about surgery if that's where they want to go. Everybody's not ready for surgery at the same time, and everybody doesn't need to do every surgical procedure that we're able to perform. But when they are ready and we can start talking about it, then they should see one of the few surgeons in the United States that does this work, and then we can start planning for surgery. And now the age limit is going downward. It was 18 that was recommended by our professional organization, and now it went down to 17, and now we're doing them at 16 years old, and I suspect that in the next couple of years it'll be down to 15 and maybe even 14, but now we're doing gender reassignment surgeries as low as 16 years old, and as old as in the upper 70s or even 80s.
Wow.
If they're in good medical health and medical condition is satisfactory, there's no reason why people can't do surgery in any age.
Do people come to you and want to be sexless? I mean, I hear a lot of that. Well, I don't know if it's a lot, but it's certainly becoming more common that I'm hearing, I don't really want to be a he and I don't really want to be a she, you know, and I don't even want to be referred to as such. I want to be called to as they. Are you finding people come to you with some unique requests like that?
Yes. There are a few people, to me, fortunately, a small number of people who have very different ideas about gender. And some people don't want to be identified in what we call this binary system, meaning either male or female. It's one way or the other. The transgender spectrum is very large. It includes all sorts of identities. And some people really want to be, don't want to have any. They just want to be ambiguous. They want to be sort of sexless and not have any specific gender at all. They don't want to be male or female, or they want to go back and forth. Some people want to go back and forth between male and female or just be both at the same time. It really is a great variability. And psychologists and psychiatrists today are teaching me that it's all okay. Whatever makes a person feel comfortable in their own skin, that's all right. Yeah, I personally don't like to do surgery on people that want some extremes of anatomy that most doctors in the world would be considered an abnormality or a congenital anomaly of anatomy. I don't feel comfortable. For instance, if someone came to me and said, my left hand causes all kinds of problems for me. It does all kinds of bad things. I want you to amputate it. Would I amputate their hand, or would I cut off someone's ear or cut off their nose because they think they disagree with the function of it or the way it appears? No, I wouldn't do any what I would consider deforming surgery and what any surgeon in the world would be considered deforming. But I feel a little bit uncomfortable with some of the requests I get, and I won't do some of the surgeries that people request of me. But I understand where they're coming from to a certain extent, and I tell them just to make sure that they have good mental health evaluation. As long as they don't hurt anyone else, the psychologists say that leave them alone and let them do what they want. But I personally have a little problem with doing surgery and creating what I would consider a human abnormality or, you know, abnormal human anatomy. I just don't feel comfortable doing that. But I do more now than I did 10 years ago or 20 years ago, that's for sure. So yeah. I'm evolving also.
Right. What is there a trickiest surgery? Like, I mean, is it the bottom surgery? Is that just blatantly the trickiest surgery? Or is it just each individual brings you what is the trickiest? And so it's hard to say.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure what you mean by trickiest, but the genital reassignment, male to female or female to male, is certainly complex surgery. They're both complex surgeries. The male to female is more commonly done and is a little bit more routine. Most of us who do the surgery do essentially the same procedure for male to female. There's not much variation in it, except for the variation of each human body. And everyone, of course, is a little different. And you have to work with people. The tissues in young people are different from older people. The tissues in very thin people are very different than heavy people. And so we alter the surgery depending on age and physical status and anomalies and weight. So the surgery always varies a little bit, but basically the male to female surgery is basically the same operation. The female to male genital reassignment is more complex and there are more options. And there is not as much female to male surgery being performed because the male genitalia, once they're reconstructed, are not as functional as the male to female genitalia. Unfortunately, we are not at the level yet where we can create male genitalia which can have a normal erection. We just can create those thousands of little blood vessels which fill up and empty to create a natural erection. And so the options, and that's a reason why a lot of trans guys don't do the surgery, because they don't have a functional penis. We can create a penis and genitalia that look very good, that look very normal. But of course, the penis is always flaccid. So what do? We can put an implant in, but unfortunately, a very large percentage of the implants extrude. They come out. It's like pushing a pencil through a block of butter sitting on your dining room table. One little push, and the pencil goes right through the butter, right? So because it's the most of the phalloplasties that we do are composed of skin on the outside and fat on the inside. And so any firm structure that's in the center of that, if it's pushed with pressure, will go right through the fat and pop out through the skin at the end. So I stopped putting in implants. Instead, we give people other little techniques to use. They can put two condoms on. They can put what I call the Coban trick. We can wrap one or two turns of Coban, which is sort of a thin self-adhesive elastic bandage around it, and put a condom over that, which makes it firm enough to have sex. They can buy a large variety of extenders and expanders that fit over the penis that gives not only size or length or increased girth, but also firmness so that they can have sexual intercourse. And some people don't use anything. Some people just, when couples come in and I ask them what they're doing, which are these techniques they're using, they say, oh, we don't usually use any of these. We just lubricate the penis, and the wife says, oh, I stuff it in my vagina. We just wiggle around. It feels okay. It feels fine. And it feels great. And sometimes we do some of these other techniques just for fun and just to be a little different. We'll try some of these other things. So it's a great variety of things, but we can't make a penis that can have a natural erection. The other main problem in female-to-male genital reassignment is the problem of extending the urethra, which is the tube that carries urine from the bladder to the outside. In a female, it's short. In a male, it's longer. It goes through the entire penis. And trans guys would like to be able to stand up and urinate through that new penis. It looks good, but they'd like to be able to write their name in the snow. I said, what do you want to do that for? You live in Florida. There's no snow there. But just a joke. But the idea is that they can stand and void through their penis like other guys. Even though a lot of men don't stay in the void, they sit down on a toilet so that they don't drip on the floor or spray on the floor or wet their shoes or their pants or things like that. So a lot of guys do sit the void. But still, they are reasons. We do have the technical ability to create a urethral extension, either using skin grafts or grafts of mucosa. That's the lining of the inside of the mouth or the inside of the bladder. We can use grafts to create an extension of the urethra. But there's a very high percentage of complications associated with that procedure, which usually require additional surgeries. So I prefer not to do that if I don't have to. That means that that individual, the trans guy, will still have to continue to sit in order to urinate, just as they have been all of their life up to that point. But I know there are two things that we would like to, and probably someday will get resolved. I suspect that the future will bring us stem cell injections or transplantations, which could create a penis that can have a natural erection or can create those thousands of little blood vessels in those two structures inside a penis called the corpora cavernosa, which permit and create erections. I think that might be an answer sometime in the future.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. You're onto the most interesting stuff. And this is exactly what people are waiting for. We do have to take a break, but wow, you're in the heart of the raw talk. And this is what people sit at home and think, wait, but what? And could that ever happen? And what would that even mean? And so we are coming back, and do not leave us, because I have a list myself of some really just straight up raw and real questions. And you are on Straight Up Sex Talk, and we are here with Dr. Sherman Lease answering these raw and real questions for you. We will be right back.
We are long overdue for the sexual movement you are about to witness. Sex may be the focus, while self-esteem will always be the goal. You are entitled to your self-esteem. This show will help you access it. You are about to be truly enlightened and invited into a community that advocates genuine learning and growth on some of the most challenging, unique, difficult, fun, and vital issues of our time. It's time to listen to the expertise of those who have made sexuality, identity, sexual health, sexual lifestyles, and sexual discovery their passion and a significant part of their careers. Your host, Lindsay Levinson, is a sexual director and an evangelist for the rights of every individual to be free, to live as they choose. Lindsay invites expansive thinking as we explore this vast sexual movement right here on Straight Up Sex Talk. Self-esteem is at the core of who we are. Is sex always a part of that? Straight Up Sex Talk will inform you that sexuality and sexual health is directly correlated with one's self-esteem. On Straight Up Sex Talk, no topic is off limits. Lindsay intends to take Straight Up Sex Talk into areas of pain, pleasure, identity, equality, health, freedom, choices, safety, fantasy, fetishes, rights, and clarity around achieving bliss. This show will discover a global platform that allows us all to become even more open, honest, compassionate, aware, and enlightened about sex and sexuality. Remember, nothing is taboo. We deserve self-esteem at its best. It is time to change the world. Welcome to Straight Up Sex Talk. The movement has begun.
I wanted to ask you, Dr. Lise, you know, surgeries, do people like facial changes, even breast augmentations, do people want too much? Can they just keep wanting, like, wow, I really do look like a pretty woman. Can you give me another one of those? Lift my eyes. Okay, tuck my chin, cut my nose off. I mean, that may be the facial part of it, but do you find that in many ways people could get a little carried away with wanting to look a certain way? Men might want a six-pack or pecs or things that are maybe more than you think they would have needed.
Well, sometimes people want to do certain cosmetic procedures that are not feminization or masculinization procedures. For instance, if we do facial feminization for someone, but they also happen to be older, 60s or 70s, and have bags under their eyes, well, they might want to do some cosmetic eyelid surgery, get rid of the bags, which I've been doing for many years. I've done thousands of those cases. So we can do that at the same time. Or if they have jowls or a loose, flabby neck, they may want to improve that if they're going to be presenting as a feminine image. They want to be the nicest looking feminine image that they can, and they like to turn the clock back a little too, so we can do eyelids and we can do a facelift. And so we do this at the same time. Can it be overdone? Well, it's always possible to overdo anything, and some cosmetic surgery patients never know when to stop. They get too carried away with the very fine points of cosmesis. But like, some people wear too much makeup, but that's sort of a personal choice. And it's an experienced surgeon which recognizes this eventually and turns down patients that want too much, that don't know the limits that they should have. It has to be at least reasonable. There's reasonable grooming and there's reasonable surgery. But when people request too much, especially when their requests and their goals are unrealistic, that's when a surgeon has to say, no, you really don't have good indications for that. I don't think that'll make you happy, and I don't think you'll get an acceptable result from that, and I would not recommend doing it. And the surgeon has to stick to his guns and not do it. Now, the patient may go to someone else who's maybe of a more hungry surgeon, some young guy that's just starting out in practice and is happy to have any case to do, and so anybody wants to come with money and put money in his hand to do something, he'll do it. But we try to train our young residents not to be influenced that way, to really make sure you have good indications for procedures. And for the most part, we do. Most of the people that we have, that we do facial feminization on, and I do a lot of this, I tell them what I would recommend. Many people who don't even live in our area near Philadelphia write to me from around the country or even other countries. And we do a consultation either on Skype, or they send me photographs of their face in different views, front view, an oblique view, a side view of their face. And then I evaluate them and I write back or I call them and we discuss them. And I make recommendations, usually starting with what I think is the most important procedure that they could do for feminization, and go down the line of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, procedures, which they might do, but some of which I would deem not so important, and some I would think would be more important. So I recommend that if they have limited funds, to do the ones up at the top of the list that are most important for feminization. And then just depends on what they can afford to do, how many of those things that they'll do. But I only recommend things that I think are really indicated. I don't recommend things just because it's possible for me to do them. And unfortunately, there are a couple of surgeons out there who intimidate patients and say, you have to do these 8-9 procedures, or if you don't do them, you won't look feminine. And I don't want to do them at all unless you do all of these procedures. And it comes to $40,000, $50,000, $60,000. And they intimidate the patients, thinking that this is what you need to do. And if you don't do it, it's not going to be any good. Well, I don't agree with that attitude. I don't like this cookie cutter approach. I don't think everybody needs to do every possible procedure that we can do. Do the things that are most important. And as long as they're associated with proper and appropriate grooming, appropriate for their gender and appropriate for their age, then they'll get a nice result. They'll learn how to put on the proper amount of makeup. And everybody doesn't have to use a ton of makeup. It depends, you know, how far you want to go. But if they use appropriate grooming, makeup, jewelry, hairstyle, and have any features that are very masculine converted to more feminine features, they can pay us very well. And I can tell you, there's been more than one patient. There have been many patients that have come to me, and I tell them that they have such a nice-looking features to begin with that I don't really recommend anything for their face. They don't have to do surgical procedures to pass. Just groom them to let their hair grow out, get a nice feminine haircut, go to a nice stylist, put a little bit of makeup on, wear a little bit of jewelry, wear feminine clothes, and you'll look fabulous. So everybody needs different things, and I don't think everyone has to do everything in order to look good.
That's awesome. So, I mean, you bring a lot of integrity to the table, and that's lacking and phenomenal to hear you talk about that. And, you know, I wondered, okay, so like one client that I had, somebody that I worked with, we walked the journey. I've walked this journey with three individuals. And so one of them, I walked it every step of the way, and it was a male transforming into a female, and it was time for the final surgery reassignment. And so this individual got a book from the doctor and actually was going to get and did get a number, if not all, I guess a couple of them were in the States to do with the facial, but just about everything else was done in Thailand. But you know, highly acclaimed doctor there, whatever, gave a book with all these pictures of vaginas, and you could look at them. And did you want a tight one? Did you want a loose one? Did you want these lips or those lips? But, you know, really red, pink, raw. The, you know, I remember flipping through the pages together, you know, getting a chuckle out of it. We were having some chuckles, but it was time to pick a vagina. Like, and is that something? Is that normal? Is that what you do?
No, I wouldn't say I do that. My goal is to make just a normal-looking body. There's a great variety of anatomic shapes, but as long as they're within what we would think of as normal, most people are happy with that. We don't really talk. I don't talk too much with my patients about. I mean, if they have any specific desires or requests, we can talk about them. And I'll try to accommodate them if it's reasonable and if it falls within the realm of what I consider normal. Because I mentioned when we talked before that I don't like the idea of making what most doctors would consider abnormal body parts. I want to give a man a 2-foot-long penis that comes down to his knees, for instance, or some other thing that I think is just ridiculous, or some exaggerated body part. As long as it's in the realm of normal, you know, there's still great variation in normal. But as long as it's within what I would consider normal variation, then I'm okay with it. But I don't give them a choice. I don't show them a book with 50 different types of labia and things like that, a loose or a normal vagina. I mean, I don't think anybody wants a loose vagina. That's, you know, women come to me for vaginoplasties because they had a few babies, or they've been, or they're older, and or they've had surgery before, and the vagina is too lax and tonic, or the labia are too droopy and lax if they're childbirth, or just some people are just born that way that have asymmetric or very different labia, and we do a labiaplasty or we do a vaginoplasty. It's usually to tighten up a vagina. Opposite that, some people have had surgery and stopped dilating. Some people have had transgender surgery, male to female, genital reassignment, and for one reason or another stopped dilating, and they develop what we call vaginal stenosis. The vagina just gets so small that it's not functional. You can't have intercourse with it. And so maybe they broke up. One girl recently told me, well, she was going with somebody. She broke up with her partner, and she said, oh, the hell with it. I'm almost sorry I did the whole thing, and I don't need this vagina anymore. She stopped dilating, and the vagina, the scar down, because she didn't continue dilating, which they have to do for the rest of their life, either dilate or have intercourse or put some kind of a toy up there to keep the vagina of a functional size. And if they don't do that, they'll get vaginal stenosis. And so we had to operate in order to open up the vagina again and create a normal size, girth, and depth of vagina. So we can do these revisions either way for a variety of problems. But I don't give them a shopping list of everybody says they want a deep vagina, you know, but not a saggy vagina. Nobody wants a sagging vagina.
Well,
they want
one
that's normal. That's normal. That functions properly. That they're able to have sex themselves or with a partner of, you know, and then that's fine as long as it's functional. And that's a relatively narrow range of normal.
Is it easy to structure that surgical procedure such that a woman will end up with an orgasm? And part two to my question is, will you use the man's parts? Are there the veins and the stimulation that happens in the man's penis and the man's testicles? And is some of that, you know, used to turn inside and work with, and that is ultimately going to be exactly what is the clitoris or the stimulation or the orgasm? Is, you know, like, can you explain what happens for a woman?
Sure.
Well,
absolutely. I mean, I could talk you through the operation quickly. I don't know how much time we have.
But you have time.
But the first thing we do, the patient's up in the thotomy position, means like as if you're going to have a baby, and or you're going to have a gynecologic exam. And under general anesthesia, the patient is prepped with betadine and draped with sterile drapes. And the first thing we do is remove the skin of the scrotum, and I pass that off to an assistant or a physician's surgical assistant, and they trim that, and we do electrolysis on whatever remaining hair follicles there are, because that skin is going to wind up inside the vagina as part of the lining of the vagina. We're going to later on attach that to the end of the penile skin, and that creates a long skin tube which goes down over the front of the vulva, creates the labia, and then turns up inside and lines the vagina. So the first thing we do is remove that scrotal skin, goes to a separate table and gets prepared for later. We remove the testicles. That's called an orchiectomy, removing both testicles. And I like to, when I transect the stump of the spermatocord, I bury that stump under the deep fascia, so that it's not close to the skin where it would be sensitive. And I suture close the external inguinal ring so the patient can't get an indirect inguinal hernia through there. So it serves two purposes to do that. And then we remove the erectile tissues from the penis, and we separate the urethra from those erectile tissues, and then the erectile tissues are resected right down to where they attach at the ischial tuberosities. They're the bones that we sit on. We preserve about one-third of the glans penis, that's the head of the penis, and leave it attached to the arteries, veins, and nerves. It's called the dorsal neurovascular bundle of the penis, which gives a blood supply and sensation to the head of the penis, which is the most erotically sensitive portion of the penis, because branches of the pudendal nerve come from there into your spine and up to your brain to where it says sex. So we preserve that. That will become the clitoris. We remove, we eviscerate the interior of the penis so that the skin is by itself. Then we separate the and we make that a flap of that one third of the head of the penis on its neurovascular bundle. We separate that and we place that exactly where a normal clitoris goes, and we suture that in place so it doesn't move. And that will always be there. And I would say close to 100%, if not 100% of my patients are able to have orgasms. Of course, there are some women, trans or non-trans, that don't have orgasms, but most women do. I'd say, you know, probably better than 99% of women are able to have orgasms, and that's an important part of their sex life, especially if they want to have a sex life. So some few don't want to, but those that do want to be able to have an orgasm, all men and women prefer to have an orgasm if they can. So the clitoris is pretty in a normal location, and it looks pretty good. And then we eliminate, we excise, and that's one of the only parts of the penis that are removed and discarded are the corpora cavernosa, those erectile tissues, because we don't need those anymore. And then, at least in the technique that I use, and then we have separately the urethra by itself, and we shorten the urethra to make it the same length as a normal female urethra. Then we take that penile skin, we invert it, and to that we suture the scrotal skin. And now we have a long skin tube, which again goes down over the front of the vulva, creates the labia, goes up inside the vagina. We pack that with vaginal packing, impregnated with an antibiotic ointment, and we make an opening in the midline of that penile flap, and we separate that incision in the midline, and that exposes the inside of the a remaining portion of the urethra, which we've opened up and spread out, flayed open to have a moist pink area right in the middle of the vulva, which makes the genitals look very normal. At the upper part of that pink moist area is the clitoris. And below the clitoris is this pink moist area that goes for about an inch and a half. And then at the bottom of that is the urethra opening where the urine comes from. And about 1 centimeter or a little more than a quarter inch to a half an inch below that is the opening of the vagina. And that opening is about, could be an inch and a half above the anus. So that's how it all lines up. And it looks very normal. And people that look at the website, again, that's thetransgendercenter.com. There are a lot of pictures on there of all these surgeries that we do and discussions of each of the surgeries so that people can read it and try to understand. I try to put it in language that everyone can understand. They can see the pictures, read the technique of the surgery, and they get a pretty good concept of what we actually do. And then you see the pictures, before and after pictures, and most people would agree that they're very normal looking. And I can tell you my patients are very happy, and I know that they're happy, especially when they go to a doctor. And if the doctor didn't know them before, the doctor has no idea that they ever had surgery. They just think that they're normal natal-born females. So that's the ultimate compliment when a doctor tells them and is very surprised when the patient tells them that they had surgery. A gynecologist should be able to tell, but most doctors wouldn't be able to tell. And certainly any guy that a trans girl would date would have no idea that that's a trans girl unless she tells them that, unless she's having trouble with a voice. That's one of the things that we do. We refer people for voice therapy so they can have a higher voice, or in some cases they can have surgery on their larynx to tighten their vocal fold so they can have a higher voice, because that's a masculine thing that's good to be changed. But it's the ultimate compliment to me when a patient comes back and tells me, gee, they went to a doctor, and the doctor checked him out, and he thought it's just a woman that had a hysterectomy. They don't have a uterus, tubes, and ovaries, but they have a very normal-looking body. Their breasts are beautiful, their face is beautiful, and their vulva and vagina look perfectly good and no problems. And then they say, well, I have to tell you, I didn't tell you yet, but I had transgender surgery. I was born, biologically a male, and I went through a transition and I had the surgery a year or two ago. Whatever. And the doctors are usually amazed, and they can hardly believe that the patient had surgery. But to me, that makes me happy, because I know that we help somebody have a perfectly normal body. You know, and I don't try to make the labia too long or too short or too high or too low. Or I put the vagina and the clitoris and everything, the labia, right where they belong, right where a normal woman has them. And I can tell you, so far, I haven't had a patient that I know of that's unhappy. they're pretty happy. And I can tell you, I have so many beautiful letters from patients telling me of how meaningful the whole transition was and how happy they are and how I helped them have a normal life and a happy life. So that's the ultimate happy day for me when I get a nice letter like that. It just makes me feel so good.
Oh my God, I bet. And as you talk about this, I mean, there's a lot of artistry involved. I mean, it is medical, but there's artistry. You have to be able to visualize what you're about to do. And absolutely. Like you said, right? No two are the same. So you're really taking a look at that, yeah. Isn't? Yeah?
Absolutely. You have to make, look, everyone's a little different. Basic anatomy is basic anatomy, but everyone's a little bit different. And a good surgeon has to know how to work with the differences in anatomy that he gets and know how to handle that and make it work, make the final result normal.
Right. We're getting toward the end of the show. We do have a couple minutes. I wanted to know, can women still get juicy? I mean, do they still provide their own juices then down there?
No. When we do male to female genital reassignment, the trans girl has to know that she should always use lubricants when she has sex because the vagina is lined with skin. Females have vaginal mucosa, which create its own mucus. And there's a slightly different bacterial population that lives in the skin than in mucosa. But they can still get, you know, any kind of infections or urinary tract infections or yeast infections in the vagina are common in all women. And they can get all these same conditions. That's why they should all, after surgery, all get hooked up with a local gynecologist that they can go to once or twice a year. Every girl should have a local GYN specialist to go to for all these routine type things. But they have to lubricate with sex.
Okay. And you talked about that they have to keep that, whether it's a toy or whether it is having sex, that it is an actual thing. They have to be able to maintain the shape and the opening. And
maintain the diameter and the depth of the vagina by either dilating or having intercourse with a man or putting some kind of a toy up there once or twice a week and douche once or twice a week for the rest of their life. Natal females don't have to douche so much because they have mucosa, which kind of has the job of cleaning the vagina a little bit. But we have to we should rinse out the vagina with a douche, just rinse it out with water, just like you rinse your hands off once in a while. It just keeps it fresh and healthy and washes out and dilutes any bacteria that are there. It's just a good thing to do. Dilate and douche or have sex once or twice a week for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Okay. I probably only have time for maybe one more question, but do they have to have electrolysis? Does everybody have to? Like, as if a man didn't, and then, you know, hairs could grow out of anywhere.
It's a good thing to do. And I advise everybody before male to female surgery to do either electrolysis or laser hair removal from the scrotum, because that hair winds up inside the vagina. You don't want to have a lot of hair inside the vagina. So yes, it's good to get rid of as much hair as possible from the scrotum.
Okay. Are there sites that I haven't mentioned, like an email? Is there anything you would like to say as a site that you would, you know, we have said the transgendercenter.com.
Could look on that website, thetransgendercenter.com. They could call the office. That's 610-667-1888. Or they can write questions or comments or send pictures to the email. And that's Dr. Sherman Lee's DR, no period, just DR, and my name, Shermanlees, at Dr. Sherman Lee's. So it's Dr. Sherman Lee's at drshermanlees.com. And that will get us their emails, their pictures, and we write back and forth. We answer all of our email. I answer all my phone calls. And if you don't hear from us, something happened to it, just write or call again. Call the office, send me an email, and we're happy to answer all the questions we get.
And how can they check out the Facebook? What's the name of the Facebook site that is your sort of fan site?
I don't know what the name of the Facebook is. I don't remember the name of the Facebook. I don't know what that is. It's probably my name on Facebook.
I think it is.
It's probably Dr. Sherman Lee's.
I think it is. So I was going to let you be the final word on that, but I do believe I just Googled in Dr. Sherman Lee's into Facebook, just as he spelled it, and it is E before I as his last name. But yeah, look that up, because that fan site, it's just great. It's just so great to see the pictures. It really, really, I mean, you move into the palpable feeling of what's going on and what, you know, the lives he's touching. And God, you just see them coming right out of surgery and what they look like. So I need to close the show. This is never enough time. I think I'll be having you back. I have my list of questions. I didn't even get through it. But Dr. Sherman Lees, thank you so very, very much for honoring me by being a straight up sex tot.
It's been a pleasure to speak with you, Lindsay.
My pleasure as well. So, you know, for the past 2 weeks, we have had Dr. Sherman Lees sharing the reality of transgender. What is the reality? Well, it's not the myths. It's not the judgments. You know, it's the truth about what it is, the experience of being a transgender. He's meeting these people. They are telling him their experience. Every one of them is different. So that's a lot of data, a lot of information, and he's walking with it. And he is growing his own knowledge by wanting to do research and understanding to serve his patients better. And as a doctor, just the reality of knowing that there is no greater gift. There's no greater gift. There's no greater value than to offer medical care that can allow someone, as I've said before, to want their life, to love their life, and to live their life. He mentioned earlier, you know, physically, emotionally, mentally. Is there any greater work that he could be doing in the medical field than helping people be at their best and like their lives and be in wellness physically, emotionally, and mentally? So think about that. Straight up sex tip for today. Here we go. It is so important that we talk to experts and that we learn from people who are trained. I'm going to keep driving this home because of all the myths and all the judgment and all the yickety yak that goes around that makes people crazy and really hurts a lot of people's feelings. So we need to talk to people who are trained. We need to get accurate information. We are quick to judge and we are quick to think that people maybe choose to be transgender on a whim, or maybe they would just want to dress in different clothing. Maybe they've decided they want to be with a different sex, so then they have to change their sex. That's not what transgender is about. So we're busy speculating and judging. But while we're doing that, you know what? We're missing the depression and the potential suicide of the person we're speculating and judging. So what a waste of everyone's time and what a darn shame. So join this movement, Straight Up Sex Talk. It is about truth. It is about knowledge. It is about wisdom. It is about growth. It is about compassion, and it is about continuing to educate ourselves so that we are better people and that we can treat people better. I do appreciate Dr. Lees being here with us for these 2 weeks. I so appreciate you listeners taking the time to be part of this community and the movement, Straight Up Sex Talk. I thank you all. I hope we have offered you value in these last 2 weeks, and I hope you will check out thetransgendercenter.com. Have a purposeful week, and just know, joining Straight Up Sex Talk, you are making a difference. So remember, the movement has begun. Thanks.